Thank you everyone for joining. Today it's my great pleasure to talk to you a bit about the variational principle in quantum physics. In the previous lectures, you have seen theoretical techniques ranging from exact diagonalization using free fermions to studying topological order using theoretical techniques. In this lecture, I'm going to specifically talk about like a technique that you have used somehow in the first homework when you use the mean field and also when you use a matrix product state. And I'm going to explain how that fit in this framework, okay? So this framework fits mostly in the mission that we have in modern physics, namely in condensed matter, where we're looking to uncover the mysteries of quantum many-body physics. So you have many examples of those systems that are relevant to the experiments. For instance, high temperature superconductor, which can cover like can have a lot of impacts in our future. There's also quantum fluids like superfluids, topological materials, which have a lot of promise for the future generation of quantum computers. And the thing is that the tools that you have studied before might fail at some point. So there, we could use numerical tools based on that variational principle that I'm going to talk about today. Okay, so this will be the main theme of this lecture. So let's assume that we're given a bunch of electrons are interacting . The goal is, if we're at very small temperatures, is to find typically the ground state, because that's typically the state of the system at low temperatures. And we can call this, for instance, psi g. Okay? So this is typically the state of the system in the regime of low temperatures. By the way, if you want, the lecture notes are online on the portal. So if you don't want to take notes, feel free to do that. You can just follow me. But if you prefer to take notes, feel free to do so. And if you have any questions at any point, feel free to stop me. Okay? So the outline for solving this question using the variational principle. So the goal of this lecture is to do that and as an outline. In the first part, I'm gonna try to identify problems with the exact approach. And then in the second part, I'm going to introduce you to the variational principle. And then last part, I'm going to introduce the numerical part of the variational principle called variational Monte Carlo, which can be implemented numerically. Okay? So let's get started with the first part. So now let's ask the question of how can we find the ground state given some Hamiltonian? H, okay. So maybe you know the answer, but just wanted to open the floor for a question. This question, like, how can we find the ground state given a Hamiltonian H?
Do it exactly by diagonalizing it.
Yeah. So which equation should we solve in that case? Yeah. Exactly. So just find the lowest eigenvalue of the Hamiltonian, which corresponds to the ground state energy, and then we solve for the corresponding eigenstate. And as you mentioned, Nikhil, we can do exact diagonalization. So if let's say we're dealing with a system of spins. So let's say we have n spins. So for a configuration might look something like this, where the size is n. So in that case, each spin has two possibilities. So in total, we will have 2 to the n in that case. So here we have 2 to the n possibilities. In that case, we can infer that the size of the graph set should be also 2 to the n, OK? And this means that the Hamiltonian should also be 2 to the n by 2 to the n, OK? So it's a huge matrix. And as you suggested, one can diagonalize. And then after doing that diagonalization, we can get the eigenvalues and extract the graph set energy among the other eigenvalues. Okay? Now, the question is, like, what's problematic about this approach? So why do you think this approach cannot solve all questions in condensed matter? We could just diagonalize any Hamiltonian. Why do you think this approach is problematic?
Complexity?
Exactly, yeah. So what is the complexity of this approach?
Exponential.
Exactly, yeah. So the problem is that the complexity here is exponential. So it can look something like 2 to the sum constant c times the system size. So it's something that's exponential at the system size. So to give you an order of magnitude, maybe you know this number before, just to give you an estimate. Like, let's say that the exponent here is something that's much smaller than the Avogadro number. So that number is around the order of magnitude of the number of atoms in our universe. So still, with this small system size, we cannot, it's hard to do this diagnosis for a large system size. So clearly, we need a different approach. OK, so is this clear for everyone? OK, so we need to think about smarter ways to find the ground state. So in this course, you have seen examples of these smarter ways of solving this equation. So for instance, in the 1D transverse field Eisen model, you have seen, for instance, the Jordan-Wigner transformation, which allowed us to diagonalize the Hamiltonian analytically. Okay, so or exactly. So we have done the Jordan-Wigner transformation, which allowed us to get free fermions, right? And by doing the Fourier transform, we got a diagonal Hamiltonian, if you remember. So we did a Fourier transform. And with that, we managed to solve the 1D transverse Eisen model exactly. There are also other techniques in the literature. For instance, you might have heard of the concept of fractionalization. Or something around the lines of parton construction, where you can decompose particles into fractional particles. And this technique can also work in some cases. So all these techniques fall into what we can call analytical techniques. But the thing is that those techniques might not be always successful in solving a certain model. So not always successful. It's good to try them as a first pass, when attempting to solve a model. But there are cases when these techniques don't work. So people, like physicists in the literature, have thought about using better methods. So one method that you might have learned in the statistical physics lectures is the quantum Monte Carlo method. So there is a quantum Monte Carlo. Or also called QMC, where the goal is to find some density matrix rho that's defined by the following. Let's assume that the system it has some temperature, inverse temperature beta. So the goal is to find this, and the way this can be done is by taking a look at the partition function, which is basically the trace of this operator here. And in quantum Monte Carlo, it turns out that by doing like a bunch of steps that I'm not going to talk about, you can actually map that to a trace over a classical Hamiltonian in d plus one dimensions. Okay. So this is, if this is the quantum system in d dimensions, then we can do this mapping. Okay. And basically, we can all run the Monte Carlo machinery in by adding one dimension. So this method works a lot and have solved also a lot of open questions, but still has some limitations. So I'm not gonna focus on the limitations here. I'm gonna focus on the other technique called the variational Monte Carlo, which is a complementary approach to this technique, okay? So let's do that. Do you have any questions so far? Okay. Now let's go to the variational principle.
And so this quantum Monte Carlo uses some sort of like quantum classical mapping. And then in this new classical Hamiltonian, everything commutes, right? It's like all.
Yeah, exactly. Everything is classical, so everything commutes. As you mentioned here, it's a quantum to classical mapping. For the interest of time, I'm not going to talk about that, but if you want, we can talk about it after the lecture. Okay? So the variational principle consists of transforming the Schrödinger equation into an optimization problem. So this is done as follows. So let's assume that the ground state is normalized. So what we can do is multiply by psi, by k psi on both sides. So this will give us the expectation value, or we can start with the energy. So it will give us the energy equal to the expectation value in the ground state as follows. Okay? And we can here observe that the ground state energy is the lowest energy that this system can have. So we can reinterpret this as the minimum over all possible states in the Hilbert space, let's say that are normalized to one, of the expectation value of such states. Okay? So if you do this minimum over all possible states, then we will get the ground state energy. Is this clear for everyone? Okay. Okay, so now if we look at the Hilbert space, it's something that's huge, and it's hard to do this minimization search here. So it's hard to look around for all possible states. So one way is to exactly introduce this variational principle. So what we can do is introduce some what we can call an ansatz that depends on some parameters lambda that only occupies a subspace of the Hilbert space. So instead, what we can do is compute the expectation value with respect to some ansatz or parameterized wave function. And instead, we could minimize over the parameters that we have here. Now, a question for you. What would be the comparison between this quantity and the ground state energy? Is the ground state energy smaller or bigger than this or equal to this? What do you think?
Smaller or equal, right?
Yeah, smaller, right? So it has to be smaller than this estimate because we're only occupying a subspace of the Hilbert space. And the upshot is that if we take a good choice of the ansatz, we expect to get a good approximation from above of the ground state energy. And the general principle is that the more expressive our ansatz is, the better our approximation. We don't need to have a lot of parameters. As long as it's a good choice, we could get a good approximation. But we could also choose a lot of parameters to do this approximation, okay? So now the question is, how can we get the minimum of this quantity, which by the way, we call also E lambda, or the variational energy. You guys have any idea for how we can find a minimum? Have any guess?
Maybe steepest descent.
Yeah, can you say it again?
Steepest descent.
So that's one way, but let's think about the simplest approach. That's the one I wanted to talk about, but let's talk about the simplest one. What's the best way, or the simplest way, to minimize a quantity that you have learned?
The derivatives.
Yeah, setting the derivatives to zero, exactly. Yeah, so we could just solve this equation. And by doing that, you can get the optimal parameters, lambda star, that would give us an approximation of the ground state energy from above. Okay, and this is actually something that's very, very promising. So you have seen examples of this before, for instance, in the context of BCS theory. A large part of this theory was actually finding about a good ansatz, and then solving this equation, and then finding optimal parameters. So as it seems that something's very simple, but it's actually very deep, and got a Nobel Prize. And we have also seen something similar in the tutorial regarding the fractional quantum Hall effects, the Laughlin states, if you remember. So the Laughlin state was actually finding about a good choice of the ansatz in solving this equation to find, if you remember, this number m that allowed us to get the fractional fill-in for the lambda levels. Okay, it's something that's very promising. And if you recall, also in the homework one, you have used a mean field ansatz, and you have also seen a matrix product set. Which are choices of ansatz that we can do. So for instance, the mean field that you have seen and the homework looks something like this. So you have the tensor product over all sites of A0. Let's say we have only two-level system. So in that case, the parameters that we're going to optimize over are A and B. For the matrix product state, or MPS, we have something that looks like that. So we have the sum over all possible configurations in the computational basis. And we had something like this. So we have a bunch of tensors, A1, A2, until AN. And here we have inputs of the first spin, input of the second spin, input of the third spin. And here we have the computational basis. So basically what we do is we feed in the spin configurations, and then we have these tensors which have a certain dimension here called bond dimension D. We can track the tensors, and then at the end we'll get a number or the amplitude. And the parameters are actually the elements inside the tensor. So those are the elements that we optimize using this principle. Okay? So far, so good? Okay. So now, the next point I want to highlight is that calculating or solving solving this equation is not always possible. You have seen that it's manageable for the mean field, and it turns out it's also manageable for matrix product states. But in other, for other choices of other ansatz, it's not possible, especially when you have a large number of parameters and you don't have these nice properties of linear algebra as in tensor networks. So in that case, as you mentioned, Nikki, we could use gradient descent. So gradient descent, as you might have seen in the, if you have attended the numerical methods course, it consists of updating the parameters in the opposite direction of the gradients of the variational energy. So we can call this the update parameter, or in the machine learning context, we can call that the learning rate. Okay, so each time we update the parameters to the opposite direction of the gradients, and you can see that by doing the following Taylor expansion. So if we call this this new energy as the following, like lambda plus delta lambda, where delta lambda is that. So we can do Taylor expansion to the first order and we can replace delta lambda, which is equal to minus epsilon times the derivative. So here we'll get epsilon minus epsilon and then the derivative squared plus the subleading term. So you see here, given that epsilon is positive, then we have a negative contribution to the energy. And this means that we always go down, given that we have a non-zero gradient. Okay, so this picture would look something like that. So let's say, maybe, does everyone can see here? Okay. So let's imagine that we have this landscape here, and let's assume that we start somewhere here with some parameter lambda. We can, in that case, the gradient is up, but the opposite direction would be the good direction to minimize the energy. So if we keep doing this, hopefully we'll get to the minimum and approximately solve this equation. Okay? So far, so good. Do you have any questions? Okay. So now we have seen that we can optimize using gradient descent, but this assumes that we can actually compute the variational energy exactly. So we're somehow assuming that we have an exact knowledge of the variational energy. But that turns out to be not the case. It's sometimes challenging to calculate the variational energy exactly. So is, and also the gradients. Of the variational energy turns out to be challenging to compute in a certain number of cases. To give you an example, I'm going to take the example of what's called a Jastrow factor that you're going to see today in the tutorial. So it's a type of wave function ansatz that's defined as follows. So we have psi jf, which is defined as a sum over all possible states in the Hilbert space of the exponential of a bunch of variational parameters jij, and then we take the products of sigma I and sigma j. And then we do this for every computational basis, or for every element in the computational basis. So basically what we do is we kind of introduce correlations between spins, and we learn or we optimize those parameters using gradient descents. Okay? But the thing is that it's hard to compute the expectation value in a generic case. But what we can do is we can calculate each amplitude efficiently. So that's something we can do exactly, but this is not efficient.
Sorry,
yeah?
Does this represent some sort of interaction? Like, do you have some, like, I don't know, position-dependent Ising interaction or something?
Yeah, so we assume that, like, in a generic case, we could assume some random parameters, but we could also assume some translation invariance where we could have, for each distance, we could have the same parameter. So,
sure. But I mean, more like, so what exactly are you trying to minimize here? Like, you have a.
Yeah, so in the generic case, we could assume, like, you know, for a quantum system, there are correlations in long range, like correlations that could be introduced at the ground state level. So here we're trying to mimic that by introducing these correlations. But now the question is that we don't know what are these numbers. So the idea is to plug that into the variational principle and minimize the parameters. So those jij's are actually the lambdas that I've, so those are the lambdas. The set of jij's are the lambdas that we're going to optimize. And at the end, we hope to get a good approximation of the ground state.
The ground state of, for what? For
a certain, so given some Hamiltonian H that we're interested in, for instance, the 1D transverse Ising model that you're going to see today in the tutorial. So you're going to see examples of how this works in practice.
I see. OK. So that's just a type of an ansatz, basically.
This type of an ansatz where it's hard to compute this exactly,
okay.
But we can compute this efficiently. You just have to, we can define a function that sums these elements, and then that by applying the exponential, you can get this very easily. So it's not something that's exponential in the system size. So this is where the Monte Carlo part in the variational principle is comes in. And this is where I'm going to talk about the so-called variational Monte Carlo. also known as VMC. So to understand like how, where the Monte Carlo parts comes, so we're gonna look at the variational energy in the computational basis. So let's assume that we're given some ansatz, psi lambda, that we can decompose in the computational basis as follows. So we can always do that. And let's assume that we can compute this efficiently, for instance, in the Jastrow factor ansatz. So in that case, we can expand the variational energy in the computational basis. So we'll have a sum coming from here and a sum coming from here. So we'll have a double sum. So we'll have a sum over sigma and sigma prime. And here we'll have psi lambda star because of the conjugate. And then we will have here psi lambda sigma prime. And in the middle, we will have the matrix elements. Okay? So we'll have the matrix element of sigma prime that connects sigma prime with sigma. So is this step clear for everyone? Okay, good. So now what you see here is a double sum over like terms that run over all possible configurations. So it's still something that's exponential. So we haven't solved anything yet. So it's still 2 to the n times 2 to the n. So that's exponential. So here we can do a trick. So we can try. The trick is to try to summon some probability in this sum. Okay. So what we're going to do, the easiest way of doing this is by multiplying and dividing by the amplitudes. So we can do a small trick here. So we're going to just multiply and divide by psi lambda. Okay? Just multiply by 1, assuming that this is non-zero. If it's already zero, then we just take it out of the sum. Okay? So far, so good? So what this means is that this times this will be the modulus squared of psi lambda. So I'm going to have the first sum. I'm going to take that out of the sum over sigma prime. And then I'm going to have another term, which is the sum over all sigma primes, the matrix element. So now I'm going to take that term on the denominator to this part here. It's just a way to rearrange the equation. Okay? And now this term here is called, in this framework, the local energy, also called E log of sigma, just shorthand notation of all this term. And this term, as you have guessed, it's something that can be interpreted as a probability. Okay? So now, does anyone have a guess of how we can approximate this sum here by taking into account the fact that we have a probability here? Does anyone have a guess of how can we do that?
You treat that as the distribution that you want your Monte Carlo to sample from? Maybe?
Exactly, yeah. So for instance, we might have cases where, so if we represent this probability distribution over all possible configurations, we might have something that's very peaked around only some configurations. So only those configurations will contribute the most to this sum. The others can be very small, and they will contribute very little to the sum. So somehow what we can do is only sample the most important configurations. And this is the original name, originates the concept of importance sampling that you might have seen before. So we can do what's called importance sampling. So by doing this, we can approximate this sum. So by getting a bunch of samples M, I from 1 to M that are sampled or from the probability distribution given by psi lambda squared, we can approximate this as follows. So it will be just the average over all the local energies. Okay. So is this clear for everyone? Like, we're taking into account the fact that only the most important configurations will contribute the most. So we were just going to sum average over those that will contribute the most. Of course, sometimes we might sample something that's here, but that's going to be very unlikely. And even if we get something that's very far away from the maxima, it will contribute very little because we will have those configurations come out more often when we do sampling. Okay? Is this clear for everyone? Now the question is how we can do the sampling, how we can get those configurations. So one way to do this is by using the so-called metropolis. Hastings scheme. So you've seen this for the numerical methods course, but in the context of continuous variables, here we have discrete variables. But the principle is the same. The way we can do this is by starting from some random configuration sigma 1 and constructing a chain of configurations until we arrive at a certain configuration m times n. I'm going to explain why is that in a second. And the way we can go from one configuration to the other is by doing some random spin flip. So you just choose a random position in your spin configuration and you flip that, and you only accept with this probability, with this acceptance probability, which is the minimum over 1 and the ratio of the new probability over the old probability. Okay, so this means that if the new configuration is more likely, we accept it. But if it's not, we still accept it with some probability that's smaller than 1. Okay? Is this clear for everyone? So this could be either smaller or larger than 1. And the trick is to do this step. So one recipe is to do this over n times. And this will basically called a sweep. So after each sweep, we take a new configuration. So that's why here I defined m times n. So we out of m times n, we're going to only take m. And using these, we're going to approximate our sum over there. And typically, this doesn't have to be exponential. So it's something that's negligible compared to the total number of possibilities. Okay. So now something that I wanted to note at the end is this term here. So maybe you will complain and say that, well, we haven't solved the problem yet because it still has an exponential sum, right? So if you look at this term here, we have an exponential number of terms. But the good thing about physical Hamiltonians is that the number of these non-zero terms is not exponential. it's actually that something that's typically linear in the system size. So the number of configurations sigma in such a way that the Hamiltonian connects sigma to sigma prime means that this matrix element is non-zero. So the number of these elements is typically linear for what we can call also local Hamiltonians. So to illustrate that, let us take the example of the 1D transverse Eisen model. Yeah, go ahead.
Does that mean that I can't use, or maybe I have to use a modified version of the VMC for like long-range interactions? Or?
So for long-range interactions, so this comes into the design of your ansatz. So if you choose a mean field, and that's not good for long-range correlations. If you choose something that looks like a Jastrow factor with, yeah, so that will capture long-range correlations.
I see, okay.
So does that help?
Yes, but wasn't there a problem that we couldn't find we couldn't calculate the energy?
Yeah, so we couldn't calculate the energy exactly, but we can calculate it approximately. And it turns out that we can also do the same for the gradients, so you'll see that in the tutorial.
Oh, sorry, I thought you meant, but we can calculate the local energy up there, right?
So we can do it here using this expression.
Yes.
So we know what's, we can do this efficiently.
Yes.
We can also do this efficiently. And since we only have a linear number of terms, mm-hmm. we can also do everything efficiently.
Yes.
Okay. And maybe something I would like to note is that the error on this is something that depends on the variance. Okay. So we will find more details in the lecture notes. So I'm not going to talk about that here. But if you curious, so you can see how you can estimate the error on this estimate, on this sampling. Okay. So here if we take the example of the transverse field Eisen model, so let's assume that we only have three spins and that we're applying the Hamiltonian on this configuration where all spins are down, okay? So the first contribution here will come from this diagonal term. So since L equal to 3, we'll have three contributions. And since all spins are down, so we'll have a minus 1 coming from the neighboring interactions. So we'll have minus 3 of that. And then we'll also have the off-diagonal contribution. So each time we apply this, we'll flip a spin at a position I. Okay, so we'll have minus g, we'll flip the first spin. Next, we'll flip the second spin. And then at the end, we'll flip the third spin. Okay, so as you can see over here, the number of terms that are comes after the number of matrix elements, which are those numbers here, is actually equal to 4. It's not equal to 2 to the 3. Okay, so this is an illustration of this fact over here for local Hamiltonians. So just for the purpose of illustration. And one thing I want to end with before showing you a demo on the screen is the fact that it's when you're doing this optimization, like you'll do a bunch of gradient descent steps, and we need to know somehow how we converge to the ground state. So a good indicator of that is the so-called the variance of the local energies. So you'll be given a question in the tutorial to demonstrate that this term has to go to zero near convergence. So that's called in the context of VMC as that zero variance principle. Okay. Do you have any final questions yet?
So we use the same, we use another MC routine to calculate the gradient of the energy as well.
Yeah, so yeah, this is a great point. So if you want to calculate the gradients, we'll have to recalculate the gradients exactly using this scheme. So there will be a question at the end of the tutorial if you have time to derive something similar to this, but that we'll have an additional term here, but that still can be computed efficiently. Okay. So just to summarize, we've seen that we can transform the Schrödinger equation that's very hard, that's very costly to solve using that exact diagonalization. So we transformed that to something that's manageable using the variational principle and also using sampling with Monte Carlo. Okay? And we've seen examples where we can use, for instance, a mean field ansatz or a Jastrow factor, but those are only examples. We could also use matrix product states or tensor networks in general, and something that could be a good motivation for the machine learning course next week. So we could also use neural networks as ansatz because they are very expressive. We could just plug those neural networks and optimize the parameters. So if you're interested to learn more about this approach, you can check out this reference. So you can check out this article, Carleo and Troyer, science paper 2017. So you'll find that also in the lecture notes posted on the portal. And at the end, I wanted to just show you a demo for how this works on a simple example, the hydrogen atom. And in the tutorial, you'll see how this works on the 1D translucent Ising model. Okay? So can I have the screen down, please? Is everything clear for you? Can you see? Do you want me to zoom in more, or you think it's good? Okay. So we're gonna take the example of the hydrogen atom that you've all seen in undergrad. So just a note here that the Hamiltonian consists of continuous variables. This is a bit different from what we have seen here in the lecture. This is just for the purpose of illustration. We can do the same for continuous variables. I just thought this would be a good example to illustrate the concept of variational Monte Carlo. In the tutorial, you'll see how the concepts we learned today, how they apply to the context of discrete variables in the context of the translucent Ising model. Okay, so here we're going to take the example of the hydrogen atom, for instance, at n equals 0 and angular momentum equals 0. So that's the case when we have the ground state. And here, we're assuming that we can absorb all the physical variables and in the distance r. So just to get rid of everything, in that case, we can show that the ground state energy is minus 1/2. And the ground state is given by this expression. So we know already that this is the result, but let's assume we don't know everything, okay? So we don't know this result. So we can just use physics principles to assume, to derive a good model for our ansatz. So we can start from the fact that the electrons should not be at the nucleus. So in that case, we should assign a zero amplitude to that configuration. So in that case, we could, for instance, assume that the ansatz starts at something that goes as r to some parameter lambda 2. And then for large distances, we know that ansatz have to decay exponentially with the distance. So we can define some exponential minus some parameter lambda 1 times r. So this is just out of like intuition. And one way to incorporate the two ideas is by taking the product of R to some exponents and the exponential. So we will have in that case two parameters, lambda 1 and lambda 2. And using this approach, I'm going to show you how we can find lambda 1 and lambda 2 equal to 1, okay, without having to do derivations. So as an initial guess, I don't know what's lambda 1 and lambda 2, so I'm going to just take some random choice. So let's start with these random numbers here. And then those are the numbers we expect from the exact results, okay? So I'm going to run. And I'm going to define my variational state, so with these parameters. And then I'm going to run gradient descent steps, which is basically the framework I've explained here with variational Monte Carlo. So I'm going to do gradient descent steps with some learning rates, epsilon equal to 0.4. So if you want, you'll find this code in the lecture notes. So you can also play with that. So I'm going to run now the optimization, and let's see what happens. So we started somewhere that's very far away, and by doing gradient descent step, we see that's going down. Now it's searching for the minimum. It's improving. So it's getting better. So you see the parameters are getting closer and closer. And here you see that we found the exact parameters that we're looking for. So of course, that's a simple example. And here also I wanted to show you that the energy variance in the log scale you see here, when the energy went closer to the exact energy, here you see that's going very fast to smaller and smaller values, okay? So this is an illustration. Of course, this is a simple example. We know the answer, but you can see that this is something that would be very powerful if we don't know what's the answer theoretically by just starting from some physics principles to construct our ansatz, or by just plugging in some complicated ansatz like a neural network or tensor network. Okay? So do you have any questions so far?
So that last thing, the last plot was the variance of the
log. Yeah, so this is something you will also see today in the tutorial. So you'll also experiment with use, like on your laptops, how the variance will go down on the transvisfit Eisen model. Okay? Something fun I thought would be good to do at the end is to do a quiz, just to make sure that you followed me. So maybe if you want, like maybe we have 3 minutes to do that. So you can join this quiz and plug in these numbers. And then once you're there, I'm going to start the quiz. So I want you to get 100%. Just to make sure I've explained everything correctly. If it doesn't work, you can just use that website and then plug in that number. So still no one has joined yet. Yeah, so we have one, Marco.
Yes.
If you want, you don't need to like use your names, like just use some random name if you want. But it's up to you, yeah. Okay, we have two. If you want, you can also watch. You don't need to if you don't want to. Yeah. Yeah. Yes, I mean, would you like also to join or?
I just don't know where I should enter this join code in the website.
Are you at the right web thing?
Maybe just scan the QR code.
No, I think you mistyped the QUIZ.
Oh, yes. It's another website.
Yeah.
Okay, did it work? Or? Okay, I'm gonna get started. So while you're doing the login, Yasmin, so you can get started if you want, Marco and Nico.
Okay. Sorry, I'm doing my choice of my phone's gonna die.
Okay, great. Okay, that's good. Like, we have a good accuracy for the class.
Oh, Nico's on a streak.
Yeah. Okay, good job. Yeah. So that was fun.